Welcome to another episode of Stage 16. Been away a little longer than anticipated, but that's okay. We're, you know, we got life going on. Life is complicated. So, you know, how you feeling, Stuart?
I'm feeling okay. I mean, you said we've been away. I've literally been away. I've just got back from 2 weeks in Tunisia.
Okay.
And the day before I went to Tunisia for 2 weeks, I quit my job. So finally did it. So,
well, congratulations, you know, I suppose.
We shall see. I'm going through that whole thing where you go, was that a wise move? And 90% of you goes, yes, it was, because, you know, it wasn't good for you. You didn't like it. But then the other 10% is like, but it was a paycheck. So, you know, yes. Got that whole devil and angel thing.
I've been there. Well, congratulations. Anyway, I think it will turn out to be for the best, and you'll, you know, in terms of the paycheck, you'll find a place to land, or you'll find a way to bring in some money.
There was two things that made me do it. One was Keanu Reeves, and it's that moment in Point Break when he looks and there's no parachute, and he's like, equivalent of screw it, and then jumps out the plane. Sometimes you've got to do that in life. And the other one was actually the wonderful Mick Garris, who I spoke to in November, and I told him what I did for a job, and he's like, you've done well to do it for that many years. And I'm like, you know what, if Mick Garris thinks this job isn't suitable for me, who am I to argue with Mick Garris?
For people who don't know, explain what you were doing and how, I mean, I know, but how awful that was.
Well, how awful the job was?
Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people will sympathize, and then there will be people who are the people on the other end of that line that'll maybe, you know, get a little introspective, hopefully. I don't know. So just take a moment and talk about the job.
Well, there are people who, when I've talked in the past on Twitter mainly, saying, oh, this job's driving me nuts. Now, at least you've got a job. And I get that argument. However, there's nothing worse than having a job that really drives you up the wall. So over the past probably 12 months, I've done this job for 6 years, there's just been no work to do. There is, so we, you know, working from home, it's an 11-hour shift through the night, 8 o'clock at night till 7 o'clock in the morning. And most of the time, we're just sitting there waiting for a customer to contact us. Usually, they end up swearing at us because they're chasing the product that hasn't been delivered. And we know how wonderfully empathic and empathetic the world is. And they care and they realize that it's not your fault. Do they heckers like? They're swearing and telling you, hope you get hit by a truck, and that kind of wears you down after a few years. So I'm like, you know what? And this job is not making me smarter. And I always like to, any job that I do, I like to go away from that job and think I've learned something. And I think the big thing that this previous job taught me is don't do this job anymore. So leave. So yeah, customer service is not, it's not fun.
And, no, it's not. It's horrible.
And some of this conversation will touch into the topic where we're talking about cinema and stuff, because people generally nowadays, they've gotten worse. They got them worse, Sean.
Yeah, they have. I mean, we talked about it in the last episode. I took my son, he's not even four yet, to his first cinematic experience, which was Pixar's Elemental. And I took video walking into the hall. I mean, like the smile on his face, he was just like, I didn't need the video. I'll cherish it for the rest of my life. He just was like, I mean, he was in awe of it, which is what it should be. And I guess I feel like people, they've lost that. They've lost the reverence for what they're seeing, you know, 1/24th of a second, you know, it's just that idea that it's magic in and of itself. Just the way that you're watching a movie, the way that the images are flickering and your eye is interpreting it as continuous motion, and that alone is magic. But then if you see a really great film, which I'll admit is fewer and far between these days, I feel like, and we'll get into that a bit, then that experience should, I don't know, it should create a little energy for you walking in. And maybe it's the younger generation that is missing that, I guess, because they're the ones that are kind of texting in the cinema and looking at their phones or checking their Facebook or whatever they're on now, you know. So I don't know, but to do that with my 4-year-old, 3.5, 3.25-year-old was amazing. It was like one of the best times I've had in the cinema in the last few years, because just looking over at him munching his popcorn and like his wide eyes looking at that screen, incredible.
And that was us when we were kids. That was us going to see, be it Star Wars or be it Raiders of the Lost Ark or Superman the movie, or, you know, depending what year you were born. I was born in 71, so I was a little bit older than your son when I went to see Star Wars. And I think for me, Close Encounters of the Third Kind was one of the first, wow, what am I watching? And I think, I mean, you mentioned, is it the younger generation because of text? And I don't think it's just the younger generation. I see a lot, and a lot of this relates to Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Oh, this is terrible and blah, blah, blah. Because they want the new film to replicate what they saw back in 1981 or 84. And they're like, why doesn't this feel the same? And there's many, many reasons why it doesn't feel the same. And I'm sure we'll get into some of them. But it's, I think it's just right across the board. I love the internet, but I think the internet has kind of damaged a lot of the magic of film.
Yeah, I would agree. It's certainly, and I know you haven't seen Dial of Destiny, so I won't get into any sort of spoiler territory. I don't know if you've even managed to avoid thus far, and we can talk about it in the next episode. Hopefully you'll see it by then. But I will say, I do think it's worth going to the cinema for. Absolutely. I think that you will go in with the right head about it in terms of expectation. I went in very much tempered, in some cases by the reviews out of Cannes. This is sort of the critics just knocked the hell out of it. And I feel like to some extent, even Twitter, the Twitterverse and other places, people have been very negative to the point that I'm not even sure why. But then I started to see more positive experiences overriding all those on Twitter and things like that. And I was like, oh, this is good. This is good. And my friend Sean, the former co-host of Stage 16, and I were talking about it. And he said, well, you know, I would say that maybe it's going to have legs and it's going to improve. And in fact, it did improve on Monday. Monday's numbers were better.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have a long runway right now because Mission is about to open. Oppenheimer, Barbie, they're all coming up real fast in the rear view. So it doesn't have a lot of time. And it cost way too much, frankly.
And I think
it cost reportedly $295 million.
And that's part of the problem, I think, with a lot of these films. I mean, you look at the box office of Dial of Destiny, you look at the box office of Flash, any other film, that would be quite a good box office, but not when the films cost $300 million. Then it becomes a problem.
Yeah, $300 million just to make it, that does not even factor in the marketing. And I mean, we've seen, they have different posters, different one sheets for it. They have the one sort of reddish, you know, Tony, I forget the artist's name, and then the other one that has kind of the dial in the background behind him, and Indy's more shadowed. And now they have character posters, and they finally got one for Sala because they left him out initially, which was weird. So it's so expensive, and even I was like, that movie shouldn't cost that much. I know that things cost more now, but you know, go back to Raiders, it cost like $11 million.
Like, and it was shorter.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, some of these films that are coming out. So you've got Mission, 160 minutes. You've got Raiders, which is like 140 something minutes. You've got Oppenheimer, which is 3 hours. I remember as a kid going to see Double Bills at the cinema. I'd go, well, I've got a free afternoon or a free Saturday. I'll go to the cinema, I'll watch two or three films. I remember once back in the early 90s, I watched five movies. I think it was Beethoven, Universal Soldier, Lethal Weapon 3. Something else, and it might have been Alien 3 or something, but I timed it perfectly. I'd never That's be able awesome. To do that now. I haven't got the free time to go see sometimes one of these movies, let alone Double Bills. So I think if you cut down the running time, and I think a lot of people have said that some stuff could have been cut out of indie without necessarily damaging the film. I mean, you'll obviously know that better than me, but that would obviously reduce the costs, and it would allow more screenings per day.
Yeah, there is some stuff that they probably could have cut. I mean, you know, it's not a spoiler to say that the opening sequence with the deepfake technology or the AI deepfake or whatever it is, that sequence is about 25 minutes from what I've heard. And I watched, what did I watch? I rewatched Raiders not long ago. And I think by the time he gets in Jock's plane and flies away from the Jovitos, that's about just 10 or 12 minutes.
Yep.
I think the sequence in Last Crusade with River Phoenix, the you know, young indie sequence, is only about 12 minutes. I definitely felt like this sequence should have been that short.
Yep.
I feel like the technology when it works, it's incredible. But the problem is it doesn't always work. And there are weird moments that you'll see when you watch it. There are just some weird things. Like for me, sometimes, well, I don't want to say because I don't want you to like be concentrating on stuff like that.
Oh, I could phase all that stuff. I could watch Cat from Outer Space now and not even think, okay. You know, analyze so it like, for its technical
flaws. So like just there's moments where like if he looks up somehow, to me, it looked like it was a little mismatched or something was weird about the eyes. So there were just times, and there's times where he's, you know, it's a night sequence, which I think helped them.
Yeah.
And that may have been intentional in order to sort of, you know, cover some of the seams. But there are times where there's light on him or very harsh light. And in those times I was like, ooh, no, it's good, but it's not great. And then to me, the biggest problem with it, and again, when it's 25 minutes long, you can't help but sort of go, well, that's weird, is they did not use AI to adjust his voice.
So you're looking at... It's an old indie's voice coming out of a young indie.
Yeah, you're looking at 35, 37, whatever, 40-year-old indie with 80-year-old indie's gruff sort of thing. And it's even... If you rewatch any of the earlier films before you go see it, it'll be even more apparent. So I almost would say, like, don't.
I nearly did. Don't. I had the urge to watch Temple of Doom this week, so I'll probably wait. And
yeah, I mean, you know, you probably know those films by heart, yeah. So you don't need to. It would have just been a thing, like the fun thing to do to lead into it. But I would actually not, because then the dissonance between what you're seeing and what you're hearing becomes even more apparent. You're like, wow, yeah, he doesn't sound like that anymore.
Yeah.
And that's no slight to him. That's age and time and whatever. But considering they used AI on like Val Kilmer's voice, supposedly in Maverick, which you can barely hear, it's a whisper, but they like melded his son with him or something like that, his son Jack. I'm curious why they didn't do it here. It was strange.
And it's not like they didn't have the budget.
Well, yeah. So, what, another, you know, add another million to 295? Like, just why not? So, but here's what I will say about it. Without coloring your perception of it. I could nitpick a lot of things about it. There are things, including the runtime of that sequence that opens the film, that I think should have been done differently, or they should have given a little more consideration to. But the stuff that they really nail, Mangold has nailed absolutely perfectly. And I will say that is the first indie film that I got a little bit emotional about.
Yeah.
Never had that happen before.
Is that because you know that it's probably, I mean, highly, highly likely that this is Harrison Ford's last outing as indie, perhaps?
I mean, that's definitely, that is the undercurrent of everything. I mean, if you've watched any of the publicity with him or the interviews, he's said like that this is what we were doing here.
Yeah.
We're showing a hero who's best days are behind him. And, you know, you're a couple years older than me, but I'm going to be 48 in a few months. And I started thinking about that. And I watched the Schwarzenegger documentary on Netflix, which at the end, I was quite sad. I was like, he seems kind of sad. He seems lonely. He seems, you know, he's in the house with the donkey and the little horse. And he screwed up his marriage and he's alone. Like, he just seemed sad. And you're like, boy, that somebody like Schwarzenegger, somebody like Indiana Jones, the character, like when all of the crazy stuff that they did in their life, and you know, Indy as a character has done some insane stuff, but Schwarzenegger in real life has done really crazy stuff. What happens when you're 70 something? Like, I remember, I'm coming up on the second anniversary of my mom's passing, and I remember a lot. Before she passed, when we would still have conversations, my mom had a pretty crazy life. You know, my mom was friends with Elvis, and my dad famously told me that the first time he ever saw my mother, she was walking on Sunset Boulevard with Ringo Starr.
Wow.
And he was driving by in a convertible, and he stopped because he was like, holy shit, Ringo Starr. And he wanted to go meet him. So he like pulled over into a parking spot on Sunset, like ran over to say like, oh my God, Ringo Starr, I'm a singer, blah, blah, blah. And then he looked, and there's my mom.
Go away, Ringo. Who are you?
Yeah, excuse me. Are you not a thing, right? Okay, let me talk to her. But having had those experiences that she had in her life, as she got older, she spent a lot of time even alone thinking about her past, thinking about, oh, what if I'd have done that? Or what if I said that to that person? And I kept saying like, Mom, you know, you got to think about now. You got to think about the future. You got to create some new goals. You got to stay active and think of things that you want to do. But now, for whatever reason, the 1-2 punch of Schwarzenegger and Indiana Jones coming to a close, like,
yeah,
I've been thinking about it a lot now too, and going like, wow, yeah, I kind of get looking back.
And then last year, you obviously had Top Gun Maverick, and, you know, seeing Val Kilmer on the screen, and this is probably going to be the last time we see Maverick on the screen and all this sort of stuff. So,
yeah, the nostalgia tour that the movies are on right now, it's weird because I feel like, I mean, I don't know, has there ever been anything like this in cinema before where there's so much looking back and connecting to much older films? I don't
think so much. I mean, you get the odd instance with Rocky Balboa coming back to, you know, after however many years since Rocky V, but that's just like one movie.
Yeah, one series, yeah.
But it was they said in 1992 and 93, there was a Hocus Pocus, there was a White Men Can't Jump, there were all these things, and then 2022, 2023, you got them all again, and this list was like a dozen films long. So they're definitely mining the nostalgia.
Yeah, I mean, they remade Overboard, which is one of the 80s movies I loved, and the new one sort of crashed and burned. They're really reaching in, and I feel like it's the weird thing is they complain all the time. Young people aren't coming to the cinema. They're on TikTok. They're playing their video games. They're not interested in movies. They've got streaming access to everything. They know now that movies will be on HBO Max Max in 45 days because that window shrunk. It used to be 90 days or something like that. So now they're just like, no, I'll wait. I'll watch it at home.
And that's one of the many, many problems why cinemas are struggling, I think.
Yeah. But at the same time, the movies that they're making are all calling back to our generation's touchstones.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, I don't know. I wonder, I should find somebody who's got like a kid who's like 12 or 13 or something and say like, do you know who Indiana Jones is? And even if you do, if your dad or your mom showed you, like, do you care?
Yeah.
Does that matter to you? Are you interested in that? I don't know.
I mean, kids love Stranger Things. So, and they certainly weren't born in like the mid 80s when a lot of the stuff that Stranger Things is based on was around. So,
yeah, but that's the brilliance of that is it's to them, that's like us watching E.T. in 82, right? It's they're watching a thing about kids that are their age that represent similar emotional things that they're going through. We watch it because we're like, hey, the kids are really good, but also look at my house was like that. My mom had the thing on the shelf.
Rubik's Cube. Explorer's poster.
All the toys, the CB radio, the whatever, like we're like, holy crap, like that they've recreated our lives in our bedrooms, and like how crazy is that? So that example is where I think they've done something that is meshing the two. Whereas, I mean, I think everybody is shocked at how Maverick did. I mean, they're just a $1 billion.
Including like, Tom Cruise. He was shocked.
Yeah. And his first single billion dollar grossing movie. Like, I don't know. I find that it's obviously an anomaly because nothing else has hit that point yet of these types. But yeah, so I wonder, like, maybe the reason Indiana Jones hasn't been a massive hit right now is because the people who really wanted to see it, our age, went right out and saw it, and that was a small chunk of the total. And the younger people were like, I don't know, it's my dad's movie.
Yeah.
You know.
So how do you think the others will fare? I mean, I enjoyed The Flash. I thought that was great. But again,
really? Yeah, okay, yeah. So I didn't see it because I heard horrible things.
No, it's just, I think part of the problem with the cinemas and the cinema audiences that don't even get me started on so-called film critics on social media, they're, you know, a lot of those need a slap. But I think there's this weird expectation that every single film that people go, and again, obviously it's not included me or you, but these, you know, critic clowns, they expect every film that they go to see to give them the same feeling that we got when we went to see Top Gun Maverick. It's like, I'm going to pay $10 or whatever to watch a film, and it's going to change my life, and it's going to be the best thing I've ever seen. Oh, no, it wasn't. It was just a good film. What was wrong with it? I think the attention span just doesn't stick with them.
Let me ask you this, though, because this is kind of goes to what I was talking about before. I feel like we aren't getting great films now the way we used to.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like it's like, you know, our parents going, oh, you don't know what music is, or you don't, oh, you have no idea. I legitimately feel like the quality level, maybe it's they haven't spent enough time in development on them. The scripts are sort of half baked, or they rush into a release date. So they're just, you know, it's like, no, just go start shooting, write it as you go. And there are people, you know, apparently that's McQuarrie and Tom Cruise's process on these mission movies. Is I've heard a bunch of people on the promotional tour they've done for the new one for Dead Reckoning Part One saying, yeah, we don't really have a script. We're just kind of, we have a place that we show up to, and then we sort of go, okay, what do we do? What happens here? You know?
Do you not think they're downplaying that a little bit, though? They're going, yeah, we just do what we do.
Well, I don't know, because I don't understand how, like, I'd love to interview Tommy Gormley, the first AD on those movies, and say, like, are they being self-deprecating in that way? I mean, or is it really like that? Because if you're an AD, how do you schedule that? How do you, you know, does anybody know what's happening on Tuesday? You know what I mean? Like when you show up, like how does that work? From a producer standpoint, I don't understand it. So there must be some structure. But the point of bringing them up is that apparently, if you're reading the reviews for Dead Reckoning, they've smashed it again. They've done it. It may not better Fallout, which is almost impossible anyway, but apparently it's a good flick, if a little convoluted. So if that is the case, and it is really a good film, they are, as McQuarrie would say, hitting a bullet with a bullet, which is not, it's really, 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 really hard to do. And so when I think of that, I think there may be some sense of malaise about cinema because the movies are just kind of okay. And every now and then you get Spider-Man No Way Home, or you get, yeah, or Maverick, or yeah, Spider-Verse, or Maverick that's out now.
Yeah.
Where it's firing on all thrusters. It's really well written. It's well acted. It's well directed. Everything works. But the average movie these days is kind of like, it was fine.
I think that definitely applies to the big blockbusters. So, you know, your Fast X, or, you know, all these $250, $300 million movies that are just crazy. But I see a lot of indie films, and some of those are just amazing. But nobody watches them in cinemas because half the time they're not even in the cinemas. But definitely with the big Hollywood stuff, I think it's just like, right, what will the kids watch? Right, how quick can we get that? Let's do a release date first before we've even got a script. And we'll do that. Right, go make it, come back. And they do what they do. It's a lot of them are the McDonald's of movies.
Yeah, exactly. And and it's weird, like as somebody who's writing films and television stuff now, I mean, obviously television is where things are really working and there's still so much creativity. And they're taking more risk. They're allowed to take. I mean, if you look at that show, The Bear, wow, what they're doing on that show, it's incredible. That's on Hulu for anybody who hasn't seen it. And the second season is out now. But yeah, in film, I just feel like there's a hesitance to take any chances. They're so reliant on IP. They're rushing these things into existence. And frankly, most of them are half-baked. Now, I'm not saying they're bad, but I'm saying, we went to see the Jennifer Lawrence movie, No Hard Feelings.
Yep.
It is not unusual for Universal, the studio, to put all of the best bits in the trailer. You can see that with the Fast movies. When you see the movie, you're like, oh, yeah, that's in the trailer. Yeah, that's in the trailer. That's in the trailer. Mm-hmm. They're you know, occasionally they'll use a different version of something, but most of the time you're watching the movie, you're like, shit, I've seen this whole movie. I've seen the whole thing. And for me, No Hard Feelings was that. I watched it. I was like, God, every funny bit is in that Red Band trailer. I shouldn't have watched the trailer because there's nothing new here. I'll take that back. There was one scene that's not in the trailer because she's full frontal nude in it. that was kind of like, you know, ridiculous and funny. But other than that, we were just like, yeah, it was fine. And I feel like that's my general reaction to most movies these days is, yeah, it was okay. Not bad, just okay.
I think that is with mine. It's, you know, I never feel the need to go, I didn't like this movie. Let me just boot up my Twitter account, tell everybody not to watch it, and, you know, go on a hate campaign and turn it into an attack dog. But I think a lot of the films I've seen are like, yeah, that was good. And that's kind of what I expect from a film. I don't expect every film to be a Top Gun Maverick or Air. If you've seen that one, that was really good. Or Tetris, you know, where you're like, wow, that was a surprise. I really enjoyed that.
See, I thought Air was, for me, Air was just okay.
I really liked it. I thought, how are they going to make a film about a pair of shoes? Come on, give me a break. So I watched it and I did. I quite enjoyed it.
But I thought it was like, I don't know. It felt like it wanted to be Jerry Maguire. I mean, there are four score cues in Air that are taken from Jerry Maguire. So they were either temping the movie with music from Jerry Maguire just to get a feel and a momentum or whatever, and they kept them for whatever reason. So I just felt like it's, you know, it's a sports movie. At the end of the day, okay, yeah, it's Nike and it's a shoe company, but it's a sports movie. That's the thing is, like, are the underdogs, Nike were the underdogs, are they going to do this? Well, we already know they are. So what are the mechanics in how they do it? I felt like the decision not to show Michael Jordan was fine until they got to the boardroom.
Yeah.
And then it was really weird.
Yeah, it was. Because you're like, there's no way that he would be able to keep himself. Yeah, that sort of takes you out of it a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, like he turns away and he's looking at the photographs on the wall. And then when they, like, Howard, I think his name is, Chris Tucker's character is like, Michael, we're going to be working together, blah, 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 blah. But you never cut to him. And Affleck was out on the publicity trail saying, you know, that you can't cast Michael Jordan because everybody's going to look at the actor and know that's not Michael Jordan. But God, man, that show about the Lakers on HBO is so well cast. And by the way, the year before we had Elvis, who's probably, besides Marilyn Monroe, maybe the most recognizable pop culture figure of all time. And Austin Butler killed it. I mean, he was phenomenal. So I was like, I don't really understand that, but okay, you made a choice. I don't think it worked. What I did love in Air was Bateman. I'm just a huge Jason Bateman fan. I thought, perfect. Damon was kind of doing what he did in Ford versus Ferrari for me. Similar thing of playing Shelby. So yeah, I don't know. For me, again, I was like, yeah, good. Not great, good.
I think one of my favorite films I've seen this year is Cocaine Bear. Because I just went into it going, okay, I want to watch a film about a bear doing cocaine. And that's what I got. And it was fine. And it made me laugh. And, you know, that's currently like sitting in my top 10.
Snakes on a Plane, Cocaine Bear. Somebody.
So I just want to watch something stupid. You know, it's like Cat from Outer Space. I want to watch a film about a cat from outer space. I want to watch Cujo, which is about a rabid dog just attacking somebody.
Somebody online was like, next, the sequel is Cocaine Squirrel. And somebody said, well, all squirrels seem like they're on cocaine. Yeah. So how do you even
There's
do
loads
that?
Of cocaine movies. There's like Cocaine Shark. There's all sorts. If you go online, there's like people are just, you know, indie filmmakers are spitting these things out like mad now.
Yeah, and that was Liz Banks directed that, right?
Yeah.
It's an interesting choice. I'm not a huge fan of her. I worked for her once and didn't love the experience.
Oh, no.
So, you know, again, I can separate the artist from the art, but I've not gotten around to Cocaine Bear, but it's on the list. So is Megan. I'm not like a movie with loads of violence. Generally, I'm not in a hurry to see those, especially lately, but I do want to watch that and I do want to watch Megan.
Megan's good. I mean, it's not too violent. Obviously, the subject matter makes it look violent because it's about a crazy doll that goes nuts and stuff. But that's very clever. And then go into the making of it afterwards and go, that's very, very clever. It's not made how you think it's made, unless you already know. But it's a smart movie.
Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely look at that. I can't even think of what I've really been. This again goes to what we're talking about. I've been on a kick lately of watching older films.
Same.
And random ones. I put on Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, like a week ago, and I probably haven't seen that in 25 years, but I remember loving it. And I, you know, it's obviously, it's not aged beautifully, but it's still a good film.
It's fun.
It's still fun. It still made me laugh.
It may not change your life, but it's entertaining for the runtime. And that's what movies should be, unless it's something like Schindler's List or something, which is an educational type movie, but film should be fun. But I've been on an old movie thing. I've been rewatching the Dirty Harry movies.
Oh, really?
So we've watched the first three. So we're watching Sudden Impact tonight, and then we'll finish it off with the Deadpool in like a day or so. But yeah, I've just been digging out my physical media because I did bin off my streaming platforms.
Oh, you did?
As I mentioned on the last one, yeah, which I haven't noticed any difference. It's not, I haven't run out of stuff to watch. I've just been digging out all these DVD and Blu-ray box sets that I've got and watching all the special features, and so I'm having a blast, just delving back into my own childhood. It seems like we're both doing that reflective thing on our youth.
Yeah, you know, Sean Roberts is too. He's talked about going into his physical media, and I mean, that he's never really gotten on the digital platform. He has streaming services, but if he loves a movie, he buys it immediately if they're selling physical media. So yeah, I mean, I'm just, well, I don't know. Even my kid, for some crazy reason, I was like, yeah, he seems okay. He can handle Ghostbusters.
Oh no.
But he did. He loves
it. Oh good.
Oh my God, he loves it. Now I skipped the librarian ghost. Mm-hmm. I mean, I let him get up to the point right before Getter, right? And then I skipped ahead and just to them, you know, joking about it outside the library. I skip the skeletal decomposing cab driver.
Yeah. The fridge. Did you skip the fridge?
Yeah. I skip Gozer in the fridge just because the head of the monster coming up, but I don't skip it later when it's in Lewis's apartment, you know, who brought the dog. He's okay with that. He's okay with, he, all the time he goes, he walks around and he goes, there is no Dana, only Zool.
Wow.
He's not even four yet. He loves it.
See, that's bad if he goes to school and does that, because he'd be like, Sean, we need to have a word. I think your child may be possessed.
Yeah, but he loves it. He's okay with Ghostbusters. He sings the song now. He told me he wants a Ghostbusters jumpsuit, which, you know, as a kid who came of age in the 80s, nothing makes me happier. If he wants lightsabers or, you know, neutron wands and backpacks and the whole, I'm good with it. He'll have everything he wants. Yeah. So I showed him that, and then I showed him Labyrinth as well, which I felt like that was maybe it could even be scarier than Ghostbusters, because those goblins they're ugly.
Because Ghostbusters has the odd scary moment periodically through the film, whereas once Jennifer Connelly gets into that labyrinth, there's pretty much this weird creatures just constant for the rest of that film.
Yeah, I mean, there's some kind of cute ones, but even Hoggle is not a very good looking little creature, whatever he's supposed to be. So in that, I skip over the pink guys that take their heads off and their arms off and their legs off, because I mean, that part screwed me up as a kid. I was like, what the hell is this? This is horrible. So I skipped them. And do I skip anything else? No, I think he's okay with the goblins. He's not really freaked out by them. Yeah, I don't think I skip anything else in that. Oh, I think I initially skipped the old lady, the pack rat lady with the stuff all up her, you know, on her back, and she starts trying to put stuff on Jennifer Connelly's back. I skipped her like the first couple times, and then for whatever reason, I was like, yeah, she's, you know, horrible, but maybe she's okay.
Because you can gauge him throughout the viewing experience, can't you? Go, well, you're okay with that, so let's turn the volume up a little bit and just, you know.
Yeah. So I was like, well, I'll try it. So we tried it, and he was fine. So he is now, you know, weaned him on Pixar, weaned him on WALL-E, which he loved, and Finding Nemo and all those, and then slowly started getting him into other movies, to the point that I was like, and again, no spoilers, I won't say much about it, but I was like, you know what? He can handle Dial of Destiny. Maybe I'll, on a good day, like if he's had his nap, I'll take him to the cinema and Indy can watch Indy as an old man before he sees him young, just to have that experience.
And then you could quiz him in a few years, go, what was that like seeing that one before all these other ones?
Yeah.
Is that something we'll never know because we watched them in the original order? So.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, they are, for me, well, I was going to say they're still, in terms of my favorites, in order of release, but actually, I think I go 1, 3, 2, 5, 4.
I'm 2, 1, 3, 4 at the minute because I've obviously not seen 5, but I do love. I have a special sort of place in my heart for Temple of Doom because I didn't know anything about the film other than standing outside the cinema, waiting 2 hours to get into the next showing and just looking at the poster going, what is he going to do? What is the Temple of Doom? What? I knew nothing because, you know, back when we were kids, it was in pictures in magazines, maybe a little 15-minute making of on the television or something like that. You know, you didn't really know too much about movies. I kind of miss that as well. I think that's a shame that people know too much about films before the films come out.
Well, do you remember the original trailer for Last Crusade? Wasn't like, it didn't show scenes from the movie. It showed them making the movie. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And it was like him pretending to staple the hat on before he got on the horse and like, you were just so amped for that. You're like, oh my God, like give me the movie now.
Yeah.
And the summer of 89, you're just like, Jesus, I want to watch it. And you didn't even see anything. You know, you just saw some lights moving around and camera cars and stuff. And you're like, good God, inject it into my veins immediately.
Yep. Take my money.
Yeah. So, and I also think, I mean, growing up, I'm sure it was the same for you. Well, maybe not. You'll have to tell me. In the U.S., we didn't get reserved theater seating until, like, I don't know, the 2000s. So there was already an eventized feeling about going to a movie. Because if you wanted a good seat, you had to stand in line for 2 hours. Yeah. You know, I remember standing outside the Mission Viejo Mall with my grandmother in 89 for Last Crusade. And my poor grandmother standing on the sidewalk outside this mall, like doing, you know, I mean, I'm sure she enjoyed the movies, but she was doing it for me and she was probably, you know, in her 60s by then. And just like, I mean, the anticipation and everybody in that line was like on their tiptoes, like, what's it going to be? And what's he going to do? And what's the MacGuffin? And you were just so excited. And so we've lost that a little bit too.
Yeah. And you that's a shame. I remember it from easily 1980 till probably the 90s, having to do that, having to queue up. Because in my early years, the cinema that was my local one was 3 screens, 1 big screen, and then it was a number 2 and a number 3 that were smaller screens. So obviously a major film would be on the number 1 screen. And often I would get to near enough the front of the queue and they would cap the line because no more seats. And I would stand there and I would wait for the full duration.
Okay, I'm the first one in line for the next screening then. Yeah.
Exactly. People wouldn't do that now. They would be online complaining, or obviously you can buy your tickets on the internet and reserve your seat. But I think a lot of the magic of film has disappeared and it's a shame. It makes me very, very sad that that there just seems to be more attack dogs online.
That
just seem to be happy when a film's not performing well.
Well, that was the Dial of Destiny thing, right? I mean, like immediately they were going after it. And it was just, I mean, I'm sure some of it was what you said earlier, where it was like, oh, it didn't equal exactly what I wanted it to be or hoped it would be. And then there were a bunch of people that were like, we don't need this movie. We didn't ask for this movie.
Do we need any movie?
Kingdom
really?
Of Crystal Skull sucked, and now this Last Crusade is the perfect ending. You know what? I won't argue that. Last Crusade was the perfect ending. They literally rode off in the sunset.
Yeah.
And if you watch The Fablemans, you make note of the horizon in the last shot of Last Crusade now. But yeah, I mean, it just seemed like everybody was ready to just pile on.
Yeah.
And then, but then I feel like more people started coming out and going, you know what? I liked it. It's not perfect, but again, Maverick is the exception, not the rule. They're just not going to always hit every note. It's impossible to. And I got to give kudos to James Mangold for even taking the job. You know, when Spielberg stepped out, that's a losing proposition. I mean, in one sense, you're like, I've wanted to make films my whole life and I'm a real director now making big movies, but my cinematic heroes now have just asked me to step in and take over their guy.
Yeah.
That's got to be like the greatest lottery ticket. And also the day you say yes, like the worst day of your life.
Yeah. It's like if somebody comes to you, Sean, and says, right, I'm going to give you $300 million to make this adventure movie. Do you want the job? You'd be like, all right, I'll take that job.
Yeah.
And then they go, right, it's an Indiana Jones film. You're going to be like, oh no, the internet's going to kill me.
Yeah.
The internet is going to come after me with their knives.
Yep.
And, you know, look at the James Gunn scenario. Yep. They went from, finally, James Gunn is going to save DC, because DC has got problems because they never really knew what they were doing. They needed a plan. They wanted to be Marvel without doing all the groundwork that Marvel did. So it did have issues. James Gunn comes in. The internet was like, yay, James Gunn's going to save us. And then for some reason, it just flipped. And everybody's like, James Gunn, put him in a Wicker Man. It's like, I don't quite understand what happened.
I mean, from my perspective, you know, I 100% agree with you that DC was interested in skipping the 10 years of setting up those pins to then knock them down with the Avengers movies in the end of the, you know, whatever, phase one or phase two, whatever it was, whatever phase. But they made a lot of movies that were not even great movies, that were just like, we're going to make this movie to establish this character so people get it. Yep. And then they built those over a decade to the point where everybody loved all of them and you created relationships with those actors as those characters. And then they started to just, you know, knock them out of the park. So yeah, I think DC did that. You know, I'm not an Aquaman fan. I thought that movie, I can't fathom, to use a nautical term, how that movie made $1 billion. What is this?
Yeah.
I was excited for The Flash, but I was excited for The Flash because of Keaton.
Yeah, he's great in it. I had no issues with it because I, you know, we've talked about separating the art from the artist.
Yeah.
You look at the Ezra Miller stuff, I get it. But when I went to see The Flash, I wasn't thinking, oh, you got into trouble and you break into people's houses and you get restraining orders. I was looking at, you know, Barry Allen and The Flash. Keaton's great in it. I took my partner Annette, she's seen a lot of movies, but she's not like an expert on DC or an expert on Marvel or anything. She had a blast. She pretty much just went to watch The Flash because I wanted to watch The Flash. But she came out at the end, she's like, that was so much better than I thought. It was a lot of fun. But you go online and people are going after Ezra. They're going after, oh, the CG didn't look perfect in some places.
Yeah, that's why I just kind of like, it took the wind out of my sails for it. Because I was going for Keaton and I was like, I'm so excited to see Michael Keaton. I mean, I was a huge Bale fan as Batman. I loved Nolan's version of that world. But I'm a kid who was there opening night in Westwood in 89 for Batman, and Keaton is my Batman. And so
he's great. He's great.
Yeah. So
Flash,
for that to come back around, I mean, I was just like, shit, just do old man Batman now with him. Just do it.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like they're going to. I think people got upset with the gun thing was when he came in and basically was like, we're not bringing Henry Cavill back, which I got to say, there were a lot of Henry Cavill fans that, you know, even though Black Adam didn't do well, they were like, oh hell yeah, we're getting another Superman finally with Cavill. And then like a couple days later, James Gunn was like, yeah, well, no, we're not doing that. We're going to find a new one. And everybody was like, wait, what? And I think maybe even Cavill, you know, he announced in the midst of that he was leaving The Witcher, the Netflix series. And I think everybody thought, okay, good. Then we're, you know, all guns blazing for Superman. And all of a sudden Gunn's like, yeah, wiping the slate clean. And so I think even part of the box office disaster, it feels like a disaster of The Flash, was people sort of going, why do I care then? Why am I investing if you're telling me there won't be a sequel to this or this version? And then he announces his slate and you're like, wait, Swamp Thing? And like, what?
Yeah, it's odd. I mean, I'm not about to sort of tell James Gunn how to do his job, but I will tell James Gunn how to do his job. I I get a little bit tired of this need for filmmakers to tell it, to keep everybody up to date on where we're up to.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you're making a Superman movie and I'm nothing to do with the film, I'm just looking forward to watching your film. I don't need you to go, this is who I've cast, this is what I've done, this is when it's coming out, I'm not doing this, I'm not, just go do your thing, because you know how to make films, and then when it's out, I'll be queuing up outside the cinema, and I'll go watch it, yeah, it'll be great.
Exactly.
And I think if Gunn would have maybe shut up and not said, we're not bringing Cavill back, we're not going to carry any of these films on, just say, we're going to take a break after Aquaman 2, and we're going to see what we come out with. Just leave that, because I think the Flash has... I mean, has it underperformed? It's made $250 million.
Yeah, well, it has. You know, it has
compared
underperformed.
Compared to its budget, it's a flop.
It has underperformed. And, but again, a lot of people, I think it was fairly split in terms of the people who said, no, it's really cool. It's, you know, a lot of people were early on saying one of the best DC movies ever. Mm. And I assume that includes Nolan's versions of Batman's, and we have the Reeve version, you know, of the Batman now. I don't know, but I feel like he cut the legs out of it by first saying I love it, it's one of the best DC movies ever, and then immediately saying nothing in this movie. Became an inconsequential film immediately. It's doesn't connect. There's no canon to be established. There's no more Keaton. There's like, it's just going to be, this is it. This is this, and then we start over. And then he announced who he was starting over with, and everybody went, well, those are some strange titles, but his sense of humor is strange. He's a bit of a, you know, if you look at Guardians, strange, left of center guy, fine. But then I think people got pissed because he announced that he's doing a Superman movie and he's writing and directing. And people were like, okay, dude, you just got the top spot with your partner Safran and you're hiring yourself to do Superman? What's up with that? You know, like, I think there was a certain amount of people that were like, well, wait a minute, you're supposed to be the studio head now, so just run DC and let somebody else do these movies. I will say the casting announcement, I don't know his first name, Corin Sweat, which is
David Corin Sweat.
Not a great last name for a movie poster.
It's not at all.
But as a huge Rachel Brosnahan fan, A+ casting on Lois Lane for her. If anything, you know, she may be older than I expected. Not that she's old, but that my thinking was along the lines of what they'll probably do with the next James Bond, which is to go a bit younger so they have more years of franchise ahead of them. And I think she's, you know, mid to late 30s. So, you know, if the timeline of these movies, like 5 years every movie or whatever, 3 to 5 years, she's well in her 40s by the time they do a second film, if it's successful. You know what I mean? Like, so that was, you know, the same problem they had with Amy Adams in Cavill's version. So, but yeah, I mean, I agree with you that people are just, you know, knives out the second anything gets announced.
Oh, terrible. I saw somebody, and I can't remember whether it was The Flash. I think it probably was. And it was on Facebook, and somebody was having a go at The Flash, just, you know, knives out and stuff. Somebody, or it might be in Indiana, actually. And this person said, I saw it last night, and I enjoyed it. Fair post.
Yeah.
Fair post. You watched it, you liked it, not a problem. Somebody replied to that person saying, you're a liar. This film is terrible. It's like, how is he a liar? Just because he liked the movie. And I think that's the difference. It's like, you know, you watch a film, you like it, I don't like it, we have a conversation, that's fine. But I'm not going to go, you liked it? You're a liar, Sean. How dare you? There's no way you like this film.
I do have to say, I was one of those people when it came to Affleck as Bruce Wayne and Batman.
Really?
Because I didn't really watch, I just thought that those, you know, Aquaman and then the Justice League, I still never really watched it. Even the Snyder cut that they put out, fantastic. I watched like 40 minutes of it and was like, yeah, I'm just not into, this is not my version of these. And part of it, I think, was that it was a continuum of what I felt they'd screwed up with the Man of Steel, you know, having him break Zod's neck or whatever it was. Like, I just was like, this sort of dark, quote unquote, edgy version of Superman, is I don't need rock and roll Superman. I like Boy Scout
like
Superman.
Chris Reeve.
I like
Chris Reeve type Superman.
Yeah, Christopher Reeve is my guy. In terms of Superman movies, I don't think you can better the scene in the second one when he's going to tell Lois that he's Superman and his stands up straight and the glasses, and you're just like, Jesus Christ. It's like magic on screen without anything, without CG, just a guy standing there, some John Williams music, and I'm so locked into that. Or even in the first film, the magic of using the rear projection screen so that he can fly away from Lois off the balcony and then 2 seconds later come to the door as Clark, and you're like, wait, what? How is this possible? Yeah. You know, that kind of brilliance. So Snyder's version from the jump for me, I mean, I was kind of like, okay, this is kind of, okay, I'm kind of into it. I like Cavill. He's good presence. I didn't love Amy Adams as Lois. I thought Costner, that was interesting. Didn't equal the emotion for me of the simplicity of the actor in Donner's version, you know, just having the heart attack in the driveway and like,
yeah, Glenn Ford,
you know?
Yep.
Yeah. So, Glenn Ford, yeah. Thank you. So yeah, I never got into that. And then when it was Affleck's, not that I thought Affleck was bad. I actually thought he was quite a good Bruce Wayne for the stuff that I did see, but it never really captured me. And so there was a poll on Twitter, who is the best Batman? And Affleck won on Twitter. Mm. And I was one of the guys going, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
This is like Snyder release the Snyder cut people like hijacking a poll. Cause there's no way. No. Like, and I still don't believe that there's a greater portion of the audience that believes that Ben Affleck is the best Batman of all the Batmans we've had. I just can't, in my brain, I'm like, I just don't understand. I don't know how you could think that.
I think you're right about the Snyder fans though. And they are incredibly vicious, you know?
Yeah. If you're an older guy, I think Keaton's all of our Batman, but he's not our only Batman, because I feel like a lot of people are like me that were like, Nolan's films, the third, you know, Dark Knight Rises, not great. Again, kind of what we're talking about. Some stuff in there that doesn't quite work, but it's a good film. It's a solid film. And as a trilogy, they're fantastic. And Dark Knight being the pinnacle. So I think Bale was an absolutely excellent Bruce Wayne and Batman, but I never bought into Affleck.
I saw somebody on Twitter and they were mad because Henry Cavill isn't going to be Superman. And they tweeted, Henry Cavill is Superman, blah, blah. So I just went back. I said, I'm sorry, you mean Henry Cavill is your favorite Superman? We all have our favorite Supermans and we can like them all. And I put in a GIF of Chris Reeve. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm not saying that Affleck didn't do a good job. And he's certainly, you know. The other thing is he's doing a different version, just the way Pattinson is doing a very different take on that character with a Kurt Cobain-esque sort of, you know, grunge Batman, which I'm totally into. Sean Roberts, for example, hates it. Hasn't even finished the movie. It was like, no. Wow. And I was like, really? You're not into like Batman Meets Seven? That's pretty awesome.
See, with the Batman, a friend of mine loaned me the 4K and I put it on 20 minutes into it. I'm like, I could barely see anything. This film's crazy dark. Nah, seen it all before. 1 hour into it, I'm thinking I might switch this off because I'm not feeling it. 2 hours into it, I'm like, this is an amazing film. I absolutely love this film. And by the end of it, I'm like, that is fantastic.
Yeah, so, wow.
Because it's a slow burn. It's like
I'm glad you hung with it. I'm glad you hung in with it.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I was just like, I went in. I mean, I'm a fan of Matt Reeves. I liked his Apes movies. I like Cloverfield. Like, he's a solid filmmaker for me. It kind of like we got a Batman movie that Fincher would have made. Yeah. That I was like, you know, this is like Darius Kanji and Fincher went off and made a Batman movie. But it's Matt Reeves. And I love it. I'm like, it's super gritty and dark and fucked up. And I mean, I was on board, but I get it. If you're not into that, to your point, like, it doesn't have to be everybody's cup of tea. There's plenty of people that won't respond to Pattinson. But there are also people, I feel like I've been defending Pattinson for years because everybody goes, oh, Twilight guy.
Yeah, like 20-odd years ago.
Yeah, and you're like, yeah, but have you watched, like, Good Times, the Safdie brother? No, I don't want to watch. I'm like, but he's really good. He's a really good actor. So yeah, I mean, I've had times like that. I mean, I was defending Timberlake before any of my friends got on the Timberlake bandwagon. You know, like the NSYNC guy. What are you kidding me? And I'm like, no. This dude's talented. Like, separate him from that. Like, he's just straight up talented. And then eventually people come around. So maybe they'll come around to Pattinson too. But
I hope so. I just wish people would just not think that every movie has to change their life permanently. Just go watch it. Spend a couple of hours. You've just escaped from, you know, your energy payments or the fact it's raining outside. Some films you'll like, some films you won't like. If every film was amazing and life-changing, there would be no amazing films because everything would be a Top Gun Maverick. You need not great films to appreciate the Mavericks.
Yeah. And as somebody who's made films also, I often say to people, it is an art form. It's commerce, right? Because we got to pay a lot of money to make these things and people have to buy tickets, but it's an art form. So it's subjective. You can stand there and say, I didn't like the color. I didn't like, you know, the photography. I didn't like the music and whatever. And the person you saw it with can be like, I thought this was the greatest fucking film ever made.
Yep.
This is my new Citizen Kane, like whatever the case may be. So there's always that. And I do try to like carry that into my thought process when if I get on social media and say, you know, I feel like I don't ever really knock a filmmaker down or whatever. Say like, well, it's just a piece of shit. I'll say, yeah, it didn't really work for me. Just didn't really work for me.
Yeah.
But it may work for others.
And the thing is, it's because I've done reviews for films where the review's not been great, but it's not been like, this is the worst piece of shit I've ever seen. It's just been like, maybe if they had a bigger budget, the film would have been better and blah, blah, blah. And I've had filmmakers come back and say, thank you for that. I'm thinking, what? I thought you were going to swear at me or something. But if you can constructively say, it's not for me, rather than just feel the need to tell the entire internet, boycott this film. Do not watch it. Do not waste your money on this film because I didn't like it. Yeah. That I think that's what really annoys me about.
And every now and then you'll see a review, even from like Hollywood Reporter or Variety or something, and you'll be like, what is this person's deal with like that filmmaker? This feels like more than a review. This is like a personal vendetta against you know the people who are making this movie, like, whoa, why is this so proportionally horrible? It's a movie. Okay, you didn't like it, you didn't get it, whatever. I do feel like in some cases, I mean, you made shorts and stuff and you've made your documentary, so you've had the experience. I almost feel like every critic should have to go make something.
Oh hell yeah. Yeah,
so that they can understand how, no matter how much money you have, you still don't have enough time. And no matter, you know what I mean? And like everything is conspiring against you constantly. It's like all the little problems that you're just trying to like, how do we creatively solve that? We can't have A, B, or C. So how do we make D work for this movie in a way that doesn't look cheap or shitty or like we forgot something or like... It's just so hard to make any of them.
And also to do that in the goldfish bowl of the world where all these Twitter peoples and Facebook people are watching you going, oh, what's he doing? Oh, no, look, they've had to do a reshoot. That means the film's terrible, by the way.
Yeah, well, exactly.
No, it doesn't. It just means they needed to reshoot something. But, you know, you go back 20, 30 years, film comes out. You're like, whoa, where did that second Indiana Jones film come from? Didn't even know that was coming because they've been off doing what they do. Being creative and fixing problems. But nowadays, I think there's just too many magnifying glasses on the movie studio.
Well, it's because I was talking with Sean Roberts too about that similar thing of like, I think we were talking about The Flash, but I was basically saying, you know, when I said, well, James Gunn announced that they're wiping the slates clean and starting over. And at the time, I think he said to me, yeah, but the average person isn't tracking that, doesn't know that. And I was like, yeah, I don't think I agree with that because I feel like whether they're tracking it or not, it's making the news now. Yeah. It's making the nightly news. New head of DC wipes slate clean. I mean, it's like it shouldn't probably. It's not, you know, relevant to the average consumer of films anyway, but like it's still there. It's in the ether and people are hearing about it or it goes by someone's Facebook feed or
that's the thing, isn't it?
You know,
me and you, me and you might look to see who's being cast as the next Superman or what the budget's going to be, and we may post about it on our social media platforms. And then the people that Sean said aren't tracking it, they're on my Facebook timeline, so they will end up,
yeah,
what's that?
So they'll see it, and they may go, oh, all right, I'll click it. I got 5 minutes. Let me click. What is this about Superman? Oh, yeah. Okay.
I'll skip that.
But then everybody has an instant opinion, and then they immediately share it either in a positive way or a negative way, and you have the tsunami of information
hatred
constantly. So, yeah, I mean, there's no way to sort of put the toothpaste back in the tube in terms of the way that the publicity machine works now and the way that the studios blast this information out constantly. I do think, you know, I watched that Dune 2 trailer, the one that just came out a couple of days ago, and it's great. And I know they will, but I honestly, I hope they don't do any more.
Yeah.
I hope they just leave it at that. I don't know the books. I was like you with the Batman on the first Dune. I saw it. I was like, I don't get it. It looks cool. It's Denis Villeneuve. It's well made. I don't understand the movie, and I don't think it's for me. Then it came on HBO Max super fast, and I was like, all right, I've liked every other film this guy has made, every other film, even his like little indie movies. I'm going to watch it again. Watch it again. Was like, okay, I'm kind of like, I still don't get things about it, but it's just so well done.
Yeah.
And my respect for it grew and grew and grew, and to the point that now I'm like, yeah, I'm ready for Dune 2. I'm going to IMAX. So it's kind of like this thing of like, people didn't have, other than their social circle, a way to instantly announce to the planet that they immediately hated something. And also I feel like maybe there's even a loss, a little bit of like, I don't know if you do this now, but if I go see a movie with a friend, we go to eat after.
Yeah, yeah.
Or we go get coffee, or we go and we talk about it. You know, when Inception came out in 2010, I think we sat in a coffee place for like 2 hours just dissecting that movie. Well, what about this? And wait, when he does that and the wedding ring and the totem and the whole, like, there used to be a way that was more common for you to experience a movie and then sort of re-experience it afterward that wasn't boiled down to 240 characters in a tweet immediately in the lobby of the cinema.
Yeah. Not even always in the lobby of the cinema, sometimes in the cinema themselves. Terrible.
But nowadays,
The dissecting of the movie, this I remember sucks. Coming out of Top Gun Maverick, and it was at least 30 minutes before I could even talk about the film. I was still choked up. And I haven't had that watching a film since, you know, like Never Ending Story or something back in the 80s, where it was just,
oh,
like,
wow, that
wow,
one.
This
okay.
is why I love movies. But it was at least 30 minutes because Annette kept saying to me, what did you think? And I'm like, nope, got to get rid of this. Otherwise,
got to process it. Got to think about it. Yeah.
What have I just seen? This is great. I do. I miss that sort of feeling, but I don't expect it on every single film I watch. And if I don't get that, I don't feel the need to write a blog article.
But let me ask you this to that point. I mean, there's a funny, do you know Sebastian Maniscalco?
No.
He's a stand-up. You should watch some of his stuff on Netflix. He does the kind of comedy that's experiential. You've felt that way a thousand times. You've gone to that restaurant. You've been at the TSA line at the airport. He does all this stuff about life stuff that makes him crazy. And it's so easy to connect to it and be like, oh my God, this guy's, you know, speaking my language right now. I think he's, for my money, he's the best stand-up working right now. He has a movie out with Robert De Niro that he co-wrote and stars in, where De Niro plays his dad. And he just, I think he's brilliant. But anyway, he's got this thing where he talks about going to a restaurant and he's like, what is it with these people that like immediately get on their app and leave a negative review for a restaurant? He was like, who's got that kind of time? He goes, if I go to dinner and the food isn't good, I look at my wife and I go, salmon suck, let's get the fuck out of here. He's like, can I leave it at that? We don't go back to the restaurant. I don't try and ruin their lives. Like, you know, and it's a similar thing about movies, but like it's just a weird time that we're in the feedback loop of things. Again, I hope Dial of Destiny has longer legs, because it's not a bad film. Again, not a great film, but it's a good film, and it's certainly a good indie adventure. There is a tinge of sadness to it, at least there was for me, in seeing the way that they're playing him, but it's very realistic in a sense. That shot in the trailer of him climbing up the wall with Phoebe Waller-Bridge and saying, like, you know, easy for you to say, kid, you haven't been shot 9 times, including once by your father, and had to drink voodoo poison, and you know, and you're like, yeah, that'll knock you down a bit. Those kind of things. So it really was tinged with a bit of sadness. It was added by knowing that this is more than likely his last time in the hat. Let me ask you this. Do you feel like we got more greats annually in the 80s and the 90s than we do now?
You mean for sort of like, for example, Gremlins and Ghostbusters opened on the same day sort of thing? I think part of that, I don't know if we get more greats. I think we probably do if you sort of look at the lists or whatever, but you've got to take nostalgia out of the equation. So the Gremlins and Ghostbusters, if they came out now, would be watching them in 20 years. But I think there's just too much content now. You know, so you think about how many films you had as a kid, you would rewatch them constantly. Maybe like every single week you would watch Ghostbusters or Gremlins or something like that. Do people do that nowadays? No, because there's always too much to watch. There's always something dropping on Netflix. There's always something dropping on Amazon or Disney or new films.
Yeah, but the weird thing is, like, I feel that way with TV. Like, Sean Roberts will call me all the time. Say, are you watching this show? Are you watching this? Are you watching that? And I'll be like, God, man, I don't know if I need another show right now. Mm. But that's more to do with cumulative time. You know what I mean? Like, at this point, if they dropped Stranger Things Season 5 tomorrow and didn't split it in half, I would be like, well, I'm going to have to stay off social media for a little bit, because I just don't have the time to binge the whole season now.
Yeah.
Like I did, whatever it was, 5-6 years ago when they dropped the first season, I watched the whole thing. You know, time seems to speed up and you just have less. And I don't know. I mean, would Ghostbusters be as successful if it just dropped right now? Well, if you had current famous people in it as opposed to the old guys now, you know what I mean? Like, maybe, because this is the thing. I don't think movies like The Godfather 1 and 2 or Jaws or Ghostbusters, this is what it goes to what I was saying earlier about why are we revisiting all of those? Why are we sequelizing all these 80s things? Because I don't think movies have stood the test of time. I don't think there's any late 90s movies that people are like begging for a remake of or a sequel to. But so many of those movies, late 70s into early 90s, have stood the test of time and are considered the greats.
I think one thing I often wonder, and I've been wondering this for months, is what films are out now or out in the past 5-10 years that people will be watching in 10 or 20 years, like, or 30 years, like we still rewatch The Thing or Alien or Gremlins or Ghostbusters. What is coming out now that will stand the test of time? I genuinely don't know. You know, Fast and the Furious,
well, that's,
franchise,
that's the
who
thing
knows?
Too. That goes back to original stuff as opposed to IP plays. Because, okay, I mean, yes, The Thing was a remake of a 50s thing. Right, fine, I get it. Raiders was a throwback to, you know, the serial movies, the 50s, you know, cliffhangers. But they were still, when they came out, they were fresh. They were original. And nobody knew what they really were, because you got, you know, very simple trailers that weren't great back in those days anyway. And you went in and you went into Alien and you just were surprised. You know, the Alien trailer was the noise and the title treatment. For
Alien
God's
sake. still holds up to this day. I'm still like, blown away watching that film.
Yeah, you would go in, you would be like, God, I don't even know what this is, but I hope it's going to be great. And then it would be great. And then you'd be like, Jesus, I hope there's another one. I hope they'll make another one. And then, you know, with Aliens, they would make another one, or with Lethal Weapon 2, they, you know, Riggs and Murtaugh are back, and you would be like, holy shit, this is fantastic. And I just don't feel like, to your point, I don't feel like there are movies now where you're like, oh my God, in 20 years, like, is there a movie now that they'll make a sequel to that I don't think there are.
But if you think some of the huge films that from the late 90s, so like The Matrix, or obviously Goodfellas from the early 90s, the cracking films, great films. But how many people do you know that sit and watch talk about those films today? And they're cracking films. They are the sort of ones that should be rewatched and should stand the test of time. But just people seem more obsessed with shared universes and multiverses.
Well, I mean, I can tell you from having worked on Reloaded, when Sean Roberts and I got hired to work on Reloaded, and he got hired first and then, you know, put in a word for me and pulled me in, that was like, I mean, in terms of like the year 2000, what the media was paying attention to, you know, people taking pictures in the streets in San Francisco and stuff of us, that was like the biggest sequel going at the time. It was like the hype on that was astonishing. We felt like we were working on the equivalent of like a Star Wars movie. But having said that, before we even got a look at the script, which we were PAs, they didn't, you know, we didn't even get our own copies. We were slipped the script to read by the AD. I won't say which one in case Warner Brothers is listening, because Zaslav will try and sue me.
They will.
But we did get a read of it. And even before then, I was like, man, they really fucked themselves with the ending of the first one. I was like, as soon as he's bulletproof and he can fly, he's Superman now and he's indestructible. So they can't undo that. You know, even working on the movie, when I was reading the script, you know, and I get to the agent fight, I'm like, this is going to look fucking incredible. But why will anybody care? You can send 40 agents at him and all he has to do is fly up in the sky. They can't fly.
Yeah.
So why does anybody give a shit? You know, looking cool is not enough. So I feel like a movie like The Matrix, if they left The Matrix then, you know, if it came out and it was that and people lost their minds and they just didn't touch it, and then right now they announced
another one,
a Matrix sequel now.
Yeah.
People would be like, Jesus Christ, this is going to be so cool.
Yeah.
Because I don't think the Wachowskis knew then that it was going to be something that people would even understand, much less want to watch again. And so they wrote that ending because it wasn't supposed to be a trilogy. And then they were like, what do we do now? It's a massive hit. But I see what you're saying. Like, there are movies that, I mean, look, Jurassic Park came out, what, 93?
Yeah.
How many Jurassic sequels have we had now and diminishing returns? I was so excited to see the last one when they got the legacy cast. And then I just heard how horrible it was, and not even like by, you know, some trolls. I mean, just uniformly people were like, God, I love these movies and this movie's so bad. And I was just like, man, what a bummer.
Did you watch it though?
No, I haven't. No,
it's nice to see the legacy characters again. And the film's okay.
But are they in it for any, or like, do they have real stuff to do?
Yeah. Like, you know, it takes a little while for them to pop into it, but then they're around for a while. There is an extended version of it on Blu-ray, which is probably one of these 15, 20 minutes longer than the theatrical version. So that obviously makes a bit of a difference. But it's not going to sit on the shelf next to Jurassic Park 1, where you're going to think, oh, do you know what? Yeah. I've not watched in a while. I can't even remember the extended title, but the latest Jurassic Park movie.
Even The Lost, I liked The Lost World. Yeah, it was good. And I even liked the third one when they got out on the water and Sam Neill was in it. And I was like, this is cool. This is fun. I liked maybe the first Jurassic World with Chris Pratt. I thought that was pretty good. And then ever since then, they've just gone like, it's just ridiculous. It's like the Fast and Furious. They're just like, I don't know.
I watched Fast X and then, you know, the moment it finished, I'm like, okay, what am I going to do now? There was no like, wow, that was a really good film. I can't wait till the next one comes out.
I will say I enjoyed it more than I thought I would.
Yeah, same. Because I'd seen Fast 9 and that is not a good film.
Yeah. And the last few, I just hadn't really done it for me. And I thought, okay, well, Justin Lin walked away like a week into production on this. He's probably tired of Vin's shit.
Yeah.
And they bring in Leterrier, who, okay, he made the Transporter movies and whatever. And I don't think anybody's going to say like Louis Leterrier in the next 5 years is going to win an Oscar. Like he's like a, I don't want to disparage a guy, but he's kind of a hack filmmaker. you know, like
would you sort of say he's maybe like a director for hire? It's like, look, we
yeah,
need
you
film
can. That's what I mean. You can bring him in. Justin Lin already prepped the movie. Here's the locations. Here's the thing. You got a little time to work on the script because the script is in flux. But like, this is the movie, and he can do that. And that franchise and that the amount of cast. And, I mean, good God, I don't know how much those movies cost.
$340 million for the newest one.
Okay, because like. I mean, just that the amount of cast alone and the egos and put, I mean, like hats off to Leterrier for managing that and stepping into that. Again, not unlike Mangold, but even more because the amount of people there. But yeah, you just kind of like you watch these movies and you're like, this is the studios are having this existential moment now. And I think to like true movie fans, it's very clear why. Because if you only make the big play, $400 million for one movie, that movie has to gross $1 billion. It has to.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you go back to making 10 movies that cost 20?
Yeah.
You know?
Go back and do the Blumhouse method. I'm a big fan of Blumhouse.
Not
every
movies.
Film's amazing, but they're great.
If you take... What, you know, I don't know sports metaphors, but don't you have a better chance of winning if you get more at bats, you know, and get more run? Isn't that Moneyball? Like we need runs.
Yeah.
We just need run. We just need people on base.
Yeah.
And their whole thing is no. Every hit, every time you swing the bat, it's got to go into the stands. And you're like, who the fuck can do that? How's that even possible?
It's like opening a shop. You can either open a shop that hopefully if you sell this one Fabergé egg, you're sorted for 12 months. You don't have to worry about anything. Or you can sell chocolate bars. I mean, you might not sell them all, but you're going to sell a lot. So you're going to keep going. This whole eggs in one basket thing is it's not working for the studios.
No, but they don't seem to grasp it. I mean, the good news is Jennifer Lawrence's movie, no matter what I thought of it, had a good opening weekend. Made 15 million, did okay. Seems like it's going to keep running. I think right now it's one of the highest grossing R-rated comedy like premieres in quite a long time.
Yeah.
I'm like, great. Because the only people that were making rom-coms was Netflix and they weren't releasing them theatrically. So if we get a few more of those, I'm happy.
Same. Bring out Strays. That's what I want to watch. I really want to watch Strays. I'm so devastated that's been delayed.
I don't even know. What is that?
Oh, you gotta treat yourself. Go onto YouTube, type in Strays. I'm not going to tell you any more than that. Just watch the trailer. Make sure it's a Red Band trailer.
Okay.
Looks like the funniest film.
Okay.
And I'm hoping that not all the funny bits are in the trailer.
By the way, the Dungeons and Dragons movie, I watched it at home.
Yeah.
Really
good.
We
watched it last week.
Really
great.
Funny.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I don't want to spoil it because it seems like a lot of people didn't see it, but the questioning scene was like, this is genius.
The right amount of humor, the right amount of action, the right amount of chemistry. Yeah, we sat and watched that
in
Tunisia.
And I mean, I'm a Chris Pine fan anyway, so he's the reason I wanted to see it, and then kind of to some extent Hugh Grant. But man, everybody in that movie is playing at top level. It was really just so enjoyable. Didn't do well.
No.
Shame. Like, I don't understand it. And then half the time it's the people who are like, we want original stuff, we're tired of superheroes and whatever. It's like, okay, but then those movies come and you don't support them.
Yeah.
You know, Sebastian Maniscalco's movie, I don't think it did great. I mean, they put it out. It had De Niro in it. Did you go see it? No, it doesn't seem like you did.
No.
So like the message to the audience is if you want more diverse stories, if you want to discover new stuff. I mean, here's one that's coming. The Creator. It's Gareth Edwards that did Rogue One. Mm. The trailer is like awesome. I don't know if the movie will be good. I don't know if it'll work. I've been a fan of his since I saw Monsters at Toronto in 2010. I guess it was when our movie was there. I went to like, you know, he was in the Midnight Showcase. And I went and saw Monsters and then heard the Q&A after of how he did it and how he did the effects himself. And I was like, this movie's great. This movie's super cool. I think part of incentivizing audiences is actually finding ways to make bigger movies into events again, the way they used to be. And I think they need to chill out on $400 million movies.
They really do. Yeah. Will they though? Who knows? Time will tell. But they do need to calm down a bit.
Well, they're all taking a bath on streaming now. They all thought that was the thing. And now they're all going to their ad supported tiers. What is the new The new word, the new buzzword is FAST, right? Which is free ad supported television. And I was like, oh, really? In my day, that was just called television.
It was, but we didn't pay per channel for that. So
yeah, I was like, FAST. What is it? Who comes up with this shit? I was like, that was just called TV. And then I saw a thing on Twitter today that said the shipping industry is about to go through a revolution. The new thing will be using air driven something. And some guy responded and said, great, I've already got a design. And the picture he shared was basically a tall ship with masts. Like, really? You know, we're going ad supported TV is the new, like, wow, that's amazing. Jesus, guys, like, how do we get to a point where studios, the people that are, by the way, the reason the writers are striking is because somebody like Zaslav is getting $37 million a year, and he can't figure out that the reason streaming worked was because Netflix paid you for your movies. And when you made your own streaming service, nobody pays you for your movies. They're your movies, and you just put them there.
It's like if somebody said, right, Sean, we need you to come sit in our studio boardroom. There's a major studio. How long do you think it would take? And you can do anything you want. How long do you think it would take from midnight for you to go, right, I've fixed most of your problems? You could probably do it in the first day.
Yeah, exactly.
I could. And it's like, I don't get paid anything ever.
They'd try to throw me out. They'd be like, you're fucking crazy. I'd be like, no, guys, you don't understand. We're out of this, you know, $400 million a movie business. This is absurd. It's absurd. Yeah,
I could do it in a day. I could.
And let's go back to making the thing.
Yeah.
You know, five people in a room. Give us a diverse group of people. Put a couple women in the group now. You know, it's 2023. Let's do that. That movie with those people in, like, what is it? Seven indoor sets and a couple, you know, like, let's do that movie for $25 million. And then, by the way, we can make 11 other movies of a similar cost. Yeah. And if they don't do great, it's not such a big loss. But also, they'll still do okay because we'll still put them on Netflix and it'll still get eyeballs. And maybe it'll be a cult thing. Who knows? You know what I mean? Like, The Thing didn't really work when it came out in 82 or whenever. Became a cult thing, and legions of people. Then they tried to make a shitty remake of it that didn't work at all because they did too much CG and blah, 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 blah. But, like, that's what they ought to be doing, and they're so not, and I'm baffled by it.
Because they're in too much of a hurry. They're in, like, right, we've got two films this year. We need to make $2 billion to do whatever. Do it now, rather than the slow. They're not treating it like a marathon. They're treating it like a sprint.
Yeah, and they're failing. Erasing movies and TV shows from existence and pulling them off forever to wherever. Not a new thing, by the way. Not a new thing. Disney used to do that purposely so that you'd want to rebuy the movie when they re-released it 10 years
later, vault,
or whatever.
The Disney vault, yeah.
But now the problem is that the physical media has sort of gone away to a greater extent, and so they don't even release these TV shows and movies into physical media. So when they take them off a streaming site, they are in a black hole somewhere, maybe never to be seen again, which is horrible. Anyway, been ranting for a while, and we've gone really long in this episode.
That's to make up for the fact that we've had a break.
That's true. We'll call this the supersized episode.
The podcast of the flower moon.
By the way, new trailer came out.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yesterday. Yeah, yeah. Oh, so good. Definitely. Yeah, so the next time we talk, you'll have hopefully seen Dial of Destiny, and we can dig into that.
I'll have seen Dial of Destiny, I'll have seen Mission Impossible, I will have seen Oppenheimer.
Okay, great. I will have seen all of those as well. I may be taken to Barbie, although I don't know. I'm all for Barbie doing very well, and I think it's going to do even better than anybody expects. But yeah, so we'll talk about all that the next time, and thank you for listening to anybody that's listening to this. And let's try and keep cinema alive.
Be positive.
All right. Thank you, Stuart.
You're welcome. Take care, Sean.